Let's face it, running a construction company can be chaotic. As business owners, we wear a lot of hats and we're constantly putting out fires. Luckily, there's a way to work simpler with BuilderTrend. I'm a huge advocate for using technology to help run AFT, and BuilderTrend is one of the most crucial tools I rely on to keep me on top of every detail. Built just for home builders and remodelers, this is an easy-to-use platform that helps manage all aspects of my business. My team's been using BuilderTrend's project management platform for the last 5 years, and we love that they're always improving and adding new features to make our lives easier. This is something that we've really tried to take on internally to find ways to improve our system every day. BuilderTrend just released a full set of financial services, added new tools like Takeoff to make estimates more accurate, and launched a total rebrand with a new mission to help change the future of construction, and we are on board. To learn more about how BuilderTrend can help calm the chaos in your construction business, visit buildatrend.com/AFT. When you schedule a demo, you'll receive an exclusive 60-day money-back guarantee only available to my podcast listeners. I'm following BuilderTrend into the future in construction. Come on board with us. Don't miss the Contractors Coalition Summit. You can go to contractorscoalitionsummit.com and join us in Minneapolis, Minnesota, Wednesday, May 15th through Sunday, May 19th. This is going to be an incredible event. Again, for all of you builders and designers looking to take your business to the next level, to learn about all things systems, organization, pricing, social media, marketing, how to be a better business owner, all the things that we wish we knew as early business owners many years ago. We're going to speak about that, also give you a Dropbox with all the content, including contracts and other documents that we're using, as well as KPIs, key performance indicators. So don't miss it. It's a huge opportunity. Some amazing vendors will be there as well that you can network with. So again, Wednesday, May 15th through Sunday, May 19th, 2024 in Minneapolis. Go to contractorscoalitionsummit.com.
I asked a lot of people, how do you approach an investor? How do you get an investor? How do you get someone to buy into it? Now that I'm here, I still don't know if I have the answer to that. But what I can say is that he understands who I am. We've went out to dinner together. We've hung out together. We connect on a personal level. And I'm pretty open about what my goals are and what my intent is and what I want to do big, like long term. And that this isn't just designed to be this profit hub.
So we got the one and only Nick Schiffer on. Welcome, Nick.
What's up, man? Good to be back.
It's been a while, dude. Repeat guest. So welcome back to the podcast.
I appreciate it, man. How are you?
Good, man. I appreciate making time. I know you've been busy with Modern Craftsman and Ennis Builders and everything else in between.
Life, yeah. Children, business.
Family's growing. Yeah,
family's growing. I think we're grown. I think it's considered grown now.
You're done now? Four and out?
You know, I actually was talking to Meg. I'm like, you know, it's not fair. Brad still has me beat. I got to beat him at something. I'm never going to beat him at golf. Never going to beat him at basketball. Kids, I could, but no, we're good. No, life's been crazy. It's I know you and I chat a lot offline, but It's been just a wild ride, but it's all good.
Maybe we start there with your spec. I know you're doing something pretty cool right now. So tell us about your spec.
I want to tell this story again. I want to be on your podcast 1 year from now and talk about the spec. It's really fun. I'm very fortunate to have some good people that are helping me pull this together. But essentially, you know, we've been in business 10 years and I started this business with a really specific goal of building really, you know, well, let me back up. I started the business not thinking I was going to be a home builder or a custom home builder. It was more just, I really enjoyed carpentry. I thought I was going to have a carpentry company. But when I got to the point of really realizing I wanted to build custom homes, I wanted to build really cool, elaborate, architecturally driven homes, architecturally distinct homes. And social media, man, has been this like wild ride of inspiration and, you know, finding the true architecture that I have fallen in love with over the last, you know, 6-8 years. So fast forward, we were working on a project in pre-construction with Vincent and his team at Of Possible, and for about a year developing this amazing house custom for a client, and ultimately the client decided to hit pause, and it like ripped the rug right out from underneath us, because it was truly a project that would have positioned us to be where we wanted to be in the custom home building world. It was a product that no one else was building. It just wasn't, and certainly what no one was documenting, and especially in our area. And Vincent and I became really close, and we had been chatting, and you know, it kept coming back to this. We just have to do this on our own. We just need to build one on our own to prove what we can do, prove that this works, and really just like hit the nail in terms of design and quality and level of execution. So it was through, you know, we were chatting one night and I said, you know what, I'm just going to make that my mission. I'm going to go find someone that can help us pull this together. And, you know, a dozen or so people, you know, I talked to all said no, you know, too risky, you know, build something, you know, more traditional, build something that has a higher yield, like higher yield based on comps. And I came across, you know, one individual that will remain unnamed, and he said, yeah, man, I do a lot of boring stuff and I'd love to do something, you know, more creative. And I love what you guys are doing. And he was a past client of ours. And he saw the value and saw the craftsmanship that went into what we did and wanted to see us really build our portfolio piece. So, truthfully, it took a long time, a lot longer to get out of the ground from acquisition than we had hoped. You know, we acquired it last March, so it's February now. So, and we're just getting footings in the ground. So that was a tough ride in terms of approvals and getting through the conservation and things like that. But here we are. We're footings are going in the ground. We're getting a little snow tomorrow, so we'll clean that off and keep trucking along. And the project's it's a little over 7,000 square foot. Really, really custom, really high level of design. Some really expensive details. And you know, the overall consideration in some of the decisions that we had to make, you know, were difficult because on one hand, there were some decisions that made a lot more financial sense. But on the other hand, you know, I've had this mentality going into it, which has been challenged many times, even today, of you need to be safe. You need to make decisions that are more financially, you know, conservative. You need to make sure that this is being marketed to enough people. And one of those decisions, I'll just tell you, is we were looking at windows, and there was a huge, huge, huge cost savings to switch the windows to a product that would do a faux white oak interior. So it was a printed white oak material. And in every photograph and every video I ever would have posted of this house, you would have never known. And I'm talking like over $100,000 in savings. And then there was this consideration of, well, what if we just switch the windows to aluminum or a powder coated metal on the inside? And we didn't. We kept them real white oak material, which was a huge cost. And we kept saying the same thing over and over, is that we have to do this right. We're going to do it once and we're going to do it right. And this isn't a house that we're going to market to 1,000 people. We're going to use that same, if not more effort, and go find the one person that wants this house and that values what we're putting into it. So that's my that's my quick summary.
I find that fascinating. I mean, I know you well enough, Nick, to know you're not going to cut corners. And anyone that's listening to you on the Monocrossing podcast, and I mean, just your platform in general, I mean, you're always going to, not just cutting edge, but you can do it right, right? You're not looking at just bottom line profit. And, you know, that is unique to you, because when you give the window example, I thought that's interesting. As you think about specs, one of the common driver, and I'm sure your market's the same as many. I mean, one thing that's tough about Phoenix, there's the reason I haven't got, oh, I got to be careful how to say this, you know, being in this market. But the reality is there's a lot of spec investment properties that are done really poorly. I guess we'll leave it at that. And
sure. Go ahead. And even if they're, sorry to cut you off, but even if they are done well, it's just a blank box. Mm-hmm. There's no character. And listen, I could be super naive. That's like, I'm well aware of that. This could all be completely a failure. I don't believe that the potential of this failing is any percentage because like I will be resilient to the end, where it's I will go find that one person that wants this house and sell it to them if I have to do it myself. It's not if I feel, and this is how I feel a lot of times, is that if it does fail, it's because I gave up. And I've said it before, there's nothing wrong with giving up. There's nothing wrong with admitting defeat. Like, you can move on and learn from it. But I just don't see that this isn't going to be one of those scenarios. I'm going to build this exactly the way we had intended to build it. And we're going to share it and document it the way we intend to document it. And we're going to find the one person that wants it, and they're going to buy it. And it's going to be something that they desired to have. Not stumbled across and was like, oh, you know, this seems fine, but can I change the tile? Nope. You're buying a one of one. This is our product. We've done all of the work for it, and that's why I have a hard time saying this is a spec, because you know it is like it's speculative in the sense that we will sell it, you know, but it's also very custom, and it's a product that we're building really for ourselves. Because on one hand, we want to sell it for a profit. But on the other hand, I want 10 people to walk through it and two of them be like, hey, I love this. Can you build me one just like it, or just the same aesthetic, but in a different neighborhood, or I already have a lot. And, you know, the core of what this is really designed to be to shift our portfolio to this scale, this style, this level of complexity and craftsmanship in terms of the homes that we build. So we start to really build this brand around what the product is and not just what our service is.
Well, I think, and maybe here's a disconnect, I think, for a lot of investment spec builders is two parts of this, Nick, because you have a vision. You mentioned this, you've kind of built this up, you know, even in this conversation, just at the level of detail and quality. And this is one off. This isn't your standard traditional, hey, we're going to go do a spec that's going to meet kind of the common theme in our area of similar construction. You know, it's easy to get evaluation. It's easy to sell. I mean, you're doing a one off that is unique. You're doing a one off with specs in it. You're doing a one off with cost of construction. There's a lot of elements. You have to find a partner that's going to align with you and say, okay, Nick, I see the vision. We're going to do this. I mean, a lot of successful projects are those one-off ones. I look at Phoenix, something that's not following the norm, right? That's totally different outside the box are the ones that are creating a niche, mm-hmm. you know, desire, community, sales pitch, whatever it may be. And that's probably the uniqueness. How hard was it when you mentioned you went to a former client to find them, you know, to align with the goal and vision, knowing that, hey, we're doing a style here. And for anyone that wants to know, of course, they can follow you, Nick, and see some of the renders and stuff you have, which are pretty incredible. But you're doing a home that's not common to your area. It's more in line with what you want to build. But you got to have someone take that financial risk. And that's usually the element that gets lost.
Yeah, I think that I've thought about this question a lot, because before I did this, I asked a lot of people, how do you approach an investor? How do you get an investor? How do you get someone to buy into it? And now that I'm here, I still don't know if I have the answer to that. But what I can say is that, you know, he understands who I am. You know, we've went out to dinner together. We've hung out together. We connect on, you know, a personal level. And, you know, I'm pretty open about what my goals are and what my intent is and what I want to do big, like long term, and that this isn't just designed to be this profit hub. You know, of course it needs to make a profit. It needs to be, you know, ultimately lead to a successful business and success financially, but that's not the immediate, you know, goal here. The immediate goal is to build our business around that niche, which will then in turn, you know, return the profit that we're looking for. So in terms of getting on that same page, it was really just being open and honest with one another as to like, what is this? What does this mean? You know, and also fueling the excitement, you know, being up, like being positive about it, you know, being, you know, continuing to have a positive outlook as to like, this is going to be successful. It's not going to be. You know, me saying out loud, like, hey, I'm not going to let this fail. Like, that's important to me to say out loud, because I have to, sometimes I have to remind myself, where it's like, I get, a dozen people saying this is too risky, you're going to lose it, you're never going to sell it. It's like, that's fine. I got to block that out, and I got to focus on the fact that, like, I know that this will sell. I know that if I do what I'm saying I'm going to do, that someone out there will want this. I'm not questioning that. It will be how hard I want to work to get that person. That doesn't mean I have to go knocking on doors, but all the social media content I'm doing on it, that might be the work that I have to put in to get someone to buy it. Two people through DM, both of which I know have the financial means to purchase a property, have already expressed interest. I'm not even out of the ground. I haven't even marketed it yet. And one of them is like, yeah, I know all the brands you're working with. I know that this house is going to be insane. I want to watch this unfold. And, you know, he asked for a rough price. I gave him a rough, you know, price, and, you know, he had communicated that was above his budget, so he's going to pass. Sure. My job, in my opinion, is I need to make him fall in love with this thing for the next 12 months. You know, because if he's already expressed interest in what this could be, you know, that's just going to build up. He's just going to continue to see this thing. And I'm sure there's a handful of other people watching this waiting for it to unfold. But ultimately it's showing that it's continuing to be positive and having that clear vision, but being transparent in what it's going to take. You know, how are we going to accomplish this? How are we going to fund it? If the bank is valuing it at this, how are we going to actually put this much money into it? Where's that money going to come from? And for me, it's, you know, there's a lot of work that goes into making up the delta between what it's supposed to cost per the bank and what it's going to cost for the design, whether that's brand partnerships, whether that is, you know, sweat equity, whether that is, you know, leveraging opportunity within, you know, my current partners, everything. And the last piece of this, or one of the last pieces of this, is the way in which we are documenting this project and the people that are involved in documenting it. And Vincent and I chatted very, very seriously about, you know, who is photographing it when it's done. You know, how we're going to tell the story, the things that we're going to focus on, and the things that we aren't going to focus on, you know, and the people that will be involved with, you know, just promoting this property at the end will be of similar caliber. It won't be just a run of the mill photographer that might get it into, you know, the newspaper. It's the same caliber photographer that's going to be, you know, be able to promote this thing at scale. And it's just like the renderings, you know, those renderings that we had done, I'm not going to say how much they were because I respect the individual that did them, but they weren't cheap at all. And those also weren't, here's a set of drawings, can you render this? You know, Vincent and his team really led the art direction on it. Every single piece of furniture in those renderings was made from scratch and specific to, you know, hey, I want this table, I want this chair, I want these plantings, I want this material, I want the material to look like this, I want the material to run. Everything was decided on through this iterative process of months to develop the imagery that's on our website. And it's a big investment up front, but ultimately those will be the things that we can continue to talk about as we're building this and showing what the will be is. Hey, this is what we are building, and continue to showcase, you know, the end result before it's truly done.
I think the strategy is really important to the conversation too, Nick, because you look at a lot of young builders, new builders, you know, one way to get your name out there is you go build a spec. You know, you have now somewhere you can tour clients. As you mentioned, you have marketing material, you have all these different avenues of information, content, creativity, name branding. I mean, whatever it is you put into this deal. And I think what's unique about your strategy is it goes to show you that you have Nick and NS Builders that you have a personal brand, you have the company brand, you know, you have the other media assets you've been doing, but you've been building this incredible company detail. Your company's grown as you're pretty open to, you know, hey, you started trim and carpentry and now you're building these amazing custom homes and remodels in the Boston area. Now you're doing a spec that's like essentially, and correct me if I'm wrong, based on knowing you, Nick, that, hey, you've done a great job based on where you've built organically to here, but now it's like, okay, this is going to elevate me to the end goal where you want to build this type of product. You want to build in great areas. And so just like a new builder is going to build a spec to put them on the map to essentially get their business going, you're established, but you're building this and I'll take you to the next level.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly it. It's, you know, we're young, especially in Boston. There's a lot of guys that have been around for 40 plus years. And it's weird. It's like 2023, for example, I met with, you know, some of these individuals that have been, that I've been pricing work against. Some of them, most of them actually reached out to me. It was like, Nick, we should grab coffee. I'm like, sure. What do you want to talk about? Because I keep pricing work against you. And, you know, and it's always been this like hush hush, everyone's a competitor. And sitting down and having coffee with these guys, they're like, no, man, like, we, you know, I'm all for, you know, friendly competition. But frankly, like, I want you to do more of the work that we're going after. And some of these guys are like, I'm kind of checked out. So I'm at some point, I need to either get rid of this business or pass on my book of business to someone else. So that's been super interesting. But it still doesn't, you know, it still doesn't help right now in terms of when, you know, we're pricing work. Like, we're oftentimes the underdog, and we're, you know, we don't bid a lot of work, but recently we have been, because we've been awarded so many opportunities to really level up in terms of who we're working with. Some amazing, amazing architects. And, you know, we're pricing a project right now and they have four or five builders on it. And it's in a different part of the state that we don't work in. And all of those other builders have either offices in that location or have worked in that location. And all of them have worked with this architect. So I'm just this guy with none of that. And, you know, and I'm in the interview process with the architect and they're like, the client doesn't care about that. I'm like, cool. What do they care about? And they, you know, clear communication, really organized, really upfront about information and making sure that when they start the project, it's not going to be this like uncovering of a surprise around every corner. So got it. Like that's what we've been working on for the last 10 years is being super transparent and dialed in with our approach. So I can speak to that, but that's fun. Like for me, that's fun because it's, you know, it's this opportunity to play in the big boy field, we'll call it. But the same token is, if that doesn't work, well, I still get the spec going on that when it is done and it is marketed, we built, you know, in my opinion, one of the coolest homes in that entire area, and it will break records in terms of sale price and you know, and just overall, like overall, it will likely win some prestigious awards. And I'm not saying that to be cocky by any means. I think like the design itself speaks for itself. It is truly a one of one. So, you know, when we pull it off, it's going to be something that there's a lot of attention on.
This episode is brought to you by Pella Windows. When it comes to building homes at AFT, almost every project has Pella Windows. And they've been just an incredible partner of ours. And locally, Sammy and Adam, they are not only amazing business partners behind us, but they are super close friends. And I speak on the podcast all the time about the importance of relationships, right? Relationships with our customers, with our vendors, with our suppliers, because at the end of the day, I'm only as good as those that help our brand and assist us in our projects to take it from the ground up all the way to completion. And if we didn't have partners such as Pella, there's no way we'd be who we are today. Over the years, we've built this amazing relationship. When we call them or email them, they respond. They're quick. Their company culture, their integrity, their honesty. You know, they are always there to do what's right for us and the customer. They can do anything from small replacement projects to large custom homes and even multi-million dollar commercial projects. And also, when you think about their product line, they can do ultra contemporary, historical preservation, and large traditional projects. So for anyone, any scale, any size, they're the ones to call. They're here local. You know, they have an amazing Instagram. Make sure and give them a follow to see what they're doing. So if you need windows and doors, give Sammy and Adam a call. We stand behind Pella. We love what they do, their culture, their brand, and especially their quality. And if you want to learn more about Pella Windows, check our show notes. We'll have everything tagged there so you can give them a follow and have their contact information to reach out.
Our clients have worked with the Sub-Zero Wolf and Co. showroom Scottsdale on nearly every project. They make the process so easy for us and our customers with either an in-person or virtual consultation. They have dedicated consultants to answer questions, provide helpful solutions, and offer advice and assistance. When you are ready to embark on your kitchen journey, reach out to the Sub-Zero Wolf & Cove showroom, Scottsdale, who will tailor an immersive, rewarding experience just for you in their stunning showroom. Gather ideas, ask questions, and imagine how your dream kitchen might come to life. All catered to you in a low-pressure and highly inspiring environment. View an array of options and see what they look like in full-size kitchen vignettes. And attend a chef-led demonstration to see and taste these appliances in action.
Well, when you say attention, what's interesting, and you spoke about this earlier in the conversation, you were speaking about just the story you're creating. You're creating a story, you're creating a journey, right, for us to follow, starting with the renderings all the way through. How important was that with the vendors? I mean, when you look at reaching out to your vendors that you have partnerships with, and I know you collaborate with a lot of them through, you know, social media and other platforms because of what you built, how does that change maybe their participation, willingness to be involved, knowing that this is a for-profit spec venture? Mm-hmm. However, even though it is a speculative project, it's backed by content, the emotional journey, that story. You know, how does that come into play with working with partners and vendors on it?
I think, you know, it's an interesting conversation because, you know, the reality is not everyone can work with a partner or vendor. And because I think people look at it oftentimes one-sided where it's like, well, I'll just post them on my social media. It's like, but what engagement does your social media have? I don't care. Like, it's not necessarily follower count, but have you positioned yourself well, whether that's locally, whether that's nationally, whether that's as a funny guy or a serious guy or a good builder or a crappy builder or an expensive, or like all of that stuff matters to build a really good brand partnership. But that's, I guess, a separate conversation. In terms of this, it is straight, you know, hey, this is going to be our, like, we're communicating. This is our opportunity to shift our business. This is what we're doing with this project. This is going to be well documented. Here's the outline for the documentation. This is how we're documenting it. Here's the photographer we have committed. Here's the publications that have already committed either shooting it or having an event at the property, and here's our strategy for how we're going to market it. And every partner that we're bringing into the project are partners that we work with anyway, and it's not a project specific partnership. It's, hey, we are building our prototype, quote unquote, and we want to work with these partners in this bubble, and when we're done with this, we want to take this bubble of partners and go build another one. It's going to look different, but it's still the same spec. It's still the same grade of material. It's still being wrapped in the same material on the envelope and has the same finishes on the inside, but it's different. It will look different. It will feel different. It will have this species instead of that species, whatever it is. But ultimately, we want to build this core of really, really high-end vendors and partners and brands to then plug and play into every home that we build. So when you walk in and say, I love this house, I want you to build me one, we know what the spec is. It's not, hey, what tile should I use? You know, and it's like, no, we have all that. We know the parameters we're working in, what plumbing fixtures we're working with, what appliances, like, we know that. Now let's design that, because that stuff's been vetted. Let's design a home around for you with that level of spec. So from the vendor side, it's, you know, that's straight marketing budget offset, where it's like, if they're doing product donation, we'll just keep it simple. If they're donating product, there is an inherent value as to what that retail cost might be. And that retail cost is typically offset by what the retail cost for the marketing we would do. It's like, well, how many eyeballs are going to be on this? How much exposure? How much time are you going to spend talking about it? Are you talking about it on the podcast? Are you talking about it on Instagram? Are you talking about it on social media? Are you talking about it on YouTube? You know, are there other opportunities? Is it a single episode or is it a series? You know, or am I a series sponsor or am I just a product that shows up in a handful of, like, it's going to be catered for every brand. Not every brand has the same marketing budget either. So it's like, hey, we'll give you $20,000 worth of material and we're hoping to get X, Y, Z out of it. It's like, okay, well, you know, we can do X and Y. That would be a fair trade for a $20,000, you know, commitment. And so it's just, you know, for me, that's where a lot of my responsibility comes into play is what brands are we already working with that make sense? And how can I go back to them and say, hey, we're doing this thing that I would love to be able to produce content specifically for you and showcase you as a sponsored product where it's not just, you know, the episode, but it's, hey, this is who we believe in. This is why we use this product. And frankly, the handful that we already have committed are really cool. We're going to be able to tell the story behind what their products are and why they are our chosen one.
Essentially breaking it down, you know, just recapping that as value, right? I mean, you're bringing value to the vendor, to the supplier, that there is a joint venture. I mean, from photographer to publication to the events you'll have in the home and just being authentic because these are products you're using, Nick. With someone listening who's trying to look at brand partners, you made a couple comment leading up to this, is you said, you know, what is your platform? You know, are you funny? Are you technical? You know, follower? There's so many variables, but at the end of the day, and I'm sure you agree, my experience has been that a lot of vendors aren't consumed with follower account, right? They look at engagement. They look at, you know, because they're, you know, there's a lot of different ways that they can place marketing dollars and revenue and product. And, you know, it really depends on the audience and what it is you're selling. You know, are you selling to their demo and you don't even have to have a big account for that?
Right. Yeah. And you know, I don't ever get feedback on how well a brand partnership does. Maybe I don't ask, but a brand recently was talking to a friend of mine and they were commenting that every time I post, even if it's not specific about them, but if I post something with their product in the shot or in the video, they are so strict on how I, like, they provide me a lot of information to make sure whatever I say is correct. And the reason being is that they will get 100 phone calls every time a video goes up of like, hey,
they love your skinny jeans.
it's you know, it's all the skinny jeans.
I wear them too. It's fine.
Dude, I was talking about one of my supers. He wasn't on Instagram and he messaged me on Friday afternoon. He goes, dude, I just joined Instagram and now I know why I don't want to be on here. I said, what are you doing? He goes, I'm reading the comments on your farmhouse video. I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, dude, that was my most viral video I've ever done. 2.5 million view, like, plays. I was like, and he's like, everyone is just an idiot. I'm like, yeah, but I've been doing this 10 years and it doesn't bother me anymore. Yeah. And I was like, I sent him a folder. I showed him a folder today of all the skinny jean comments that I got on YouTube. And one was like, wearing skinny jeans that tight will give you a yeast infection. I was like, man, I'm like, how bad of a day are you having? but my point, like, the interesting flip side of that brand partnership, when they're getting 100 phone calls, is I don't know how long, maybe 5-6 years ago, I had a problem with a piece of stone that cracked behind a back, as a backsplash. And I reached out to the vendor and they basically were like, you know, user error, you didn't install it correctly. Okay, no problem. And I did a story. I think it was just a story. I could be wrong. I think it was a story. And the story was, you know, I didn't bash the company. All I said was, hey, you know, at the end of the day, the buck stops with me. You know, the vendor's not going to work with me on this. This is the issue I'm dealing with. So it's my responsibility to do what's right. So I'm going to have to buy a new piece of stone and replace this and make this right. You know, whether or not the vendor stands behind it, that's, you know, that's for me to deal with and not the client to deal with. And dude, I got a phone call of a very upset distributor, the stone distributor. And they said that they got 200 phone calls and dozens of cancellations. Like, people calling me like, hey, I watched Nick's video. I want to cancel my order. And I was like, hey, this was not intended to be a bashing of you guys. Like, that was solely just like, hey, this is how I play out the scenario. I'm here for my customer, regardless of who supports me or not. And I think they ended up helping me at that point, obviously. But it was that moment I realized, I'm like, man, like, I do have, again, it sounds, I feel like I'm coming off as cocky, but it's like, there's a lot of influence that can happen through, mm-hmm. through that. So, you know, obviously I'm a little bit more careful in the way I communicate things, but realize that, hey, when I am working with a brand or potentially working with a brand, I'm like, hey, this is, I'll use those examples, both good and bad. And just, you know, be upfront, like, this is the power of it. And, you know, and ultimately I'm not looking to push product. You know, I also don't want to go in there and be like, hey, this is great. And this is great. And this is great. And this is great. It's like, I'm not going to be everything to everyone. Like, I like to have my go-to, you know, like, I like to use my product. If there's another product that does just as good of a job, great. Like, I don't need to push both of them. I don't need to use both of them. If I do, then I'm probably going to tell some legitimate story that, like, hey, this product was no longer available, so we switched to this one, but it's okay because this product does just as good. And it's not, this one's better. No, this one's better. Or, like, I'm not going to play into that game. And, you know, ultimately, I explained this the other day, is that I don't want my videos aren't designed to be how to, it's why. It's like, this isn't how we do it, this is why we do it. And you're going to learn you might learn the how through the visual, but I'm going to talk about the why. And really that has been what has led us to being synonymous with, you know, attention to detail and intentionality and craftsmanship, is that I'm talking about why we do things. It's like, yeah, okay, that's overkill, but here, let me explain to you why we're doing it.
That's a good breakdown. Because I was going to ask you, I mean, I don't think you're being braggadocious in any ways about the platform, because I mean, you've built it, Nick. I mean, I know you well enough. I spend a lot of time with you to see the effort and time you put in, and it's very targeted and, you know, very coordinated. You know, there's a plan in place, right? And those outside that don't see how detailed you are with these things, you know, and how aware and, you know, networking, anything else that goes into it. Now, for someone that's looking to build their platform, I essentially just gave them a little nugget here where you said, how to versus why, because a lot of people may look at the how to side and say, okay, I'm going to be a thought leader, or I'm going to tell you I'm going to do this certain thing. And some of those posts can do well and go viral. But when you're looking at overall the messaging you're trying to build to your customer base, or what the spec you're building, is the why. And that's the story. That's really where people are gravitating or look at NS builders as, hey, this is a level of quality because it's why, it's not how to.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I just think that the why, you know, the why is just more important. You know, when you think about sales and the psychology behind sales, and, you know, I think the people that do the best, or that are the best salesmen, are the ones that allow you to come up with the decision to do something. And I think that in our industry, I see a lot of people selling like, you should work with us because we're going to be, you know, yeah, we're the most expensive, but we're going to get we're going to give you the best quality. It's like, well, that sounds great, but what is that? Like, explain to me why I should pay more money for that. Explain to me how that benefits me. And we don't spend any time explaining like the benefits of why you should pay for higher quality. Or why you should use a self-adhered WRB, or why you should build a passive level construction home. It's like, well, you should build it because it's better for the environment. It's like, okay. Like, but at what? Oh, well, it's a 10% increase to cost. And for anyone listening, I'm making that number up. Like, but you're not connecting to the end user. It's like, that client, maybe they don't care about the environment. Maybe they're only expecting to be in that home for a year. And you're telling them that the payback is 10 years, 7 years, 5 years, whatever. And they're like, that doesn't matter to me. But when you start talking directly to the benefit of what that client will, that matters to them, It's like if they got kids and they want, you know, they got kids with, you know, asthma or like, you know, or health concerns. It's like, hey, you know, building a, you know, a passive level home or really airtight home where it's going to allow us to control the environment on the inside and we can really monitor the air quality and make sure that you're getting continuous fresh air in the home and you're not dealing with, you know, the stale air building up. And, you know, it really is going to allow you to live in a much healthier environment within the home, which you're spending, you know, 70% of your life in. Does that sound better? Well, now the client's like, oh, I'm thinking about my kids. Yeah. My kids have asthma. They're constantly getting sick. Oh, that's the thing that we're trying to talk about in the why. It's like, you know, we're about to put footings in for our spec. And I was talking to my concrete guy. I'm like, hey, I need to put waterproofing on top of the footing before you put the wall up. And I've done a video on that before. And it's like, I'm not telling you, hey, this is how you put waterproofing on. I'm like, hey, I put waterproofing on top of my footing because it helps with the capillary action.
Capillary brick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It helps prevent the water from wicking up the bottom of the foundation wall. And you get 50% of the guys, that doesn't matter. It's like, okay, but it doesn't bother. Like, it also doesn't hurt the project. It's something that I've decided that is important because I don't want moisture working up my wall. That's why we do it, because I don't want the moisture up the wall. And why I don't want the moisture, because if I can remove more moisture from being in my living space, now I'm not worrying about mold. Now I'm not worrying about efflorescence on the backside of the foundation wall. You know, I'm able to control that. So yeah, that's something that I care about. And I'm explaining to you why I do it.
Yeah. And unfortunately, you and I still deal with the same thing with our trade partners, that you may walk through the capillary break and they're sitting there looking at you like not understanding the purpose of it. And, you know, and you and I have been around enough to understand how water affects us, moisture, capillary breaks, efflorescence. Mm-hmm. I mean, all these things, especially in Phoenix, I mean, we deal with hard water and it's very clear. It's very evident that one, you know, the builders that haven't put capillary breaks and haven't waterproofed correctly. When you look at the structure of the deal, this investment, and you don't have to get into specifics, Nick, but what one thing that builder struggles, how, if I'm going to go do a spec, how do I do that? You know, I may be young, I may be established such as yourself. And I have a lot of peers here where, you know, there's a couple ways to do it. They may go to an investor may say, okay, Nick, if you're going to do my spec, I expect you to do the build at no cost. There's going to be no supervision, no fee. You're going to build it out. That way you control costs because you're skin in the game. I'm paying the money, but mm-hmm. your skin in the game will be to build this out within budget, time frame, and then once it sells, we'll split the profits 50-50. Okay, fair enough. So you're making an investment in your company. You're going to manage it, no supervision, no labor. You're not paying yourself. The trades are getting paid. And then once it sells, you have that upside potentially. Yeah. Or, you know, some will have a set fee and maybe it's minor because, you know, it's a loss leader, if you will. They're having a small overhead fee to cover some of their time. But again, you know, there's parameters to set their budget. How, when you're doing something one-off like this in Boston and very creative and, you know, how difficult was it to put that deal together, the structure?
It was very difficult. It's very difficult because in one hand, we were trying to design something that is, you know, that we feel as though will sell for over market value, but there's still a bank involved that says you need to build this within the market rate. So there's this delta right now where, you know, there's additional money that I'm raising, you know, in different forms to bridge between what the bank funds and what it actually takes to build. And, you know, and that's the part that I can't speak to specifically until we fully execute it. Because right now it's just, this is the plan. But for though, like if you're getting into it, you know, you just have to be like super transparent and with that partner. I think if that partner can go in at a 50-50 profit split where you do put, you know, you're basically putting, you're covering your costs, but you're not making any money on it. And, you know, ideally if you can build that model to also include supervision, I would. get a super that can run that or run a couple of them. I think that would be hugely beneficial. We right now don't have the budget for that because we're spending that money elsewhere. But, you know, ultimately it's, you gotta be able to write, sit down on paper and be like, this is what this is going to cost. And, you know, and based on the market, like, hey, what does the market say I can sell this for? And then of course your financing costs and your carry costs, all of that, you know, has to be factored in. And thankfully on my side, it's, you know, that is something that our partner is handling. They're looking at that. They're saying, Nick, execute. What's this going to cost? Here's where we're at budget wise. Here's what I'm doing to bridge the delta. Here's how I'm going to make up for this overspend on this line item. You know, here's how I'm going to cover the cost for the window, like all of that. And at some point, you know, the goal is to be able to pre-sell this thing. And that's a whole nother kind of game I'm playing with in my mind where I haven't marketed it because it's too early in my mind. If I put it on the market and someone drives by the lot, it's a hole in the ground. It doesn't, like, it goes from like peak excitement to peak defeat. It's like, oh, this isn't even a project yet. So my thought is that we're going to get the foundation backfilled and then the whole frame up. And then there's a structure there that we're physically working on. And then people will drive by and be like, holy shit. Can we swear on the Brad Levitt podcast?
Yes, you can.
And drive by and really be like, okay, this is a real project. And then, you know, now we're marketing it. Now we're seeing like who is interested in buying it. And I think the hardest thing for me will be when someone is ready to buy it, but wants to change something. And I will continue to say, and I will say it on the Brad Levitt podcast, I'm not changing anything. This is, you're buying a product. You're buying what we've designed. And if there is some sort of change that wants to be made, we'll listen to it and we will audit it. And if it disrupts the goal of what we're trying to accomplish here, then I need to have the cojones to say no.
Yeah, here's what I'll commend you, Nick. And I think the way to break it down, whenever you're doing, and I don't even want to say it's one-off, but whenever you're doing a luxury product, a one-off, you know, something that's state of the art, nothing like it. And I mean, heck, you can even go as general in the auto industry. I mean, imagine someone saying, hey, I have.
Imagine telling Ferrari, it's like, hey, I love that, but do you mind like shaping the rear fender a little tighter?
Ferrari's, yeah, but like,
F off, bro. Yeah,
exactly. But in fairness to your spec, the reason why I think it's when you're doing this type of product, why you shouldn't release the price or market it or advertise it yet is because it's not tangible. When people walk it and they say, look, yes, these windows are not printed white oak. This is real, mm-hmm, white oak. You know, when they see touch feel, just like you go buy a vehicle and you're looking at an AMG G-Wagon compared to whatever other SUV out there. Well, see, touch, feel, there's different attributes, right? And there's
a base model G-Wagon. It's, yeah, like, why would I spend
140 to 220? Grand. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an $80,000 like, delta or whatever with some of the options and upgrades, right?
It's like, oh, I don't know. Then I go to the dealership and I sit in both and I'm like, oh, well, now I know.
Yeah.
Is this worth 80 grand to me? Maybe.
And even outside of making changes that you wouldn't want to make, I think more importantly, when you're creating such a unique product, there's value to say it's done. Come see it, touch it, feel it, and the price.
I think that's my goal. And I think that's probably one of the more aspirational goals with it, this being the first, is to hold it all the way to completion and then you have sell to. It. I want to. I think it will be really hard when we get towards the end and we have exhausted our funding on it.
Yeah.
And if we do pre-sell it, it's hopefully late enough in the game, or at least have a commitment, right? Where it's like, hey, we're finishing it as is. Because I agree, like right now it's not tangible, and I go to put that on the, I put a rendering up and then and I put the price on it, and they're like, what, this guy wants it 50% more than what market everything else on the market is? This guy's out to lunch, forget it. And they dismiss it right in that moment, and it's never another thought. Mm-hmm. Where it's like, I'd rather build this you know, this momentum and build this brand around what this is, and people start following it. Like, I want to know how much it is. I want to know how much it is. I want to, it's, you know, I follow this company in Greya. I've talked about them 1,000 times, and two brothers in Australia. And I would say that they're like 3 to 4 years ahead of me in terms of like where their business was to today. And they have a very similar model. Most of the stuff they're building, designing, and selling on spec, but I follow their builds. And then they put them, I forget what they call it in Australia, but they put them on the market for basically like submit your best offer with no starting point. Just like you tell me what you'd pay for this. And I can't tell you how obsessed I get over. I'm like, I want to know what this thing's selling for. Like, I'm watching this thing built. It's sick. And I just want to know what they end up selling it for. And there's just, and you don't have any idea what their marketing, what their goal is, and like what their target price point is. And then, you know, a month goes by, you're like, yep, we sold it for 10 million, broke every record in the whole area. And I'm like, yeah, that's the point, is to get people to fall in love with it and pay the price that product deserves. And not because I want to make a ton of profit. I want to make sure that my investor gets paid his portion, makes a profit. We need to make a profit as a business, but I want the product to sell at the price point that it deserves to sell at, because of the work that goes into it by everyone that's involved, and sets the stage as to, hey, this caliber of product exists. You don't need to go build a custom home. This product exists, and here it is. You're not buying a really cool, fancy exterior and walking inside, and it's just this white box that you can kind of do whatever you want with. It's like, no, every room's been figured out and thought through. We got some crazy shit in this house. And we had a meeting last week. Like, if you go to my website, it's under our projects for White Oak. But in the living room, there's these beams that go across the entire ceiling, and
structural.
If they're not there, but they wrap every TJI. So they're not just like applied to the bottom of a plywood ceiling. They're going around every TJI. So the framing has to be coordinated spot on. Mm-hmm. But the that's one of the crazy parts, and I'll share a section detail when we get to that point. But the crazier part is, I met with our White Oak supplier for those beams, and they're sending them in 23 foot lengths. So it's a single piece of White Oak that'll span the ceiling.
Just to ship, that's a pain.
Yeah. It fits in a container.
Yeah.
But yeah, but it's like shit like that where it's like, well, you could just piece it together. I'm like, I could. And then when someone walks through and looks at them, like, oh, that seam looks like shit. I want someone to walk through that place and look around and be like, man, like, everything just seems really well done. It's like, no shit. Like, that's because we took the time to figure it out. Because if there was going to be a seam in that beam, the whole ceiling was going to change, and we're going to add intermediate beams and figure it out. So there wasn't, you know, it's worth thinking, like, that's the whole point. It's like we're thinking it through now. Another crazy example, the windows changed. We changed manufacturers early on, and the windows were slightly different, and the entire facade had to be redrawn because of the material we're using on the facade has no, like, essentially no tolerance. There is tolerance, but very little tolerance, where, you know, it looks like clapboard siding, but it's actually a brick tile. And every seam lines up with a window. It goes up and it terminates at the very top of the gutter line, and then it turns and it goes across the whole roof line. And everything has, like, everything has to be the exact height on this building within an eighth of an inch for this to work around the whole house. So it's like the tolerance, you know, the tolerance is there. We have to, and we have to hit it. But the only way to hit it is to really think this thing through and make sure we understand where, you know, where's our fluff? What can we pre-build versus what do we have to adjust in the field?
Now, coordination wise, as you look at this, you know, going into this design, it sounds like, I mean, you've been pretty involved yourself, Nick.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm definitely more involved than I not thought I would be, than I should be probably, but on the flip side, it's like, I'm really focusing on building the team to continue to build the operations and run operations so I can be involved in this to help set the stage. Cause I think if I let go of it, that's where it would fail. Is not because someone else couldn't do it. It's just that no one else understands what we're truly trying to accomplish here and doesn't, you know, isn't going to pull the same, you know, effort cards that I might, where it's, you know, I know to the extent of what we need to do this and some of the details that we need to pull off and some of the ridiculous details that will be those moments that we get to talk about that make people laugh and be like, man, like, this is just psychotic. And those are going to be the details that are really fun. And, you know, and for me, I want to pull off that I can go and put a little sweat equity into it and turn a detail that could be a couple thousand dollars into something that is just my time. And it is a large enough statement to the overall project itself.
So what, I know the company's changed, like, every company, every business, when you look at sports, all those analogies, I mean, you look in your home team, Patriots, man, they've rebuilt themselves. I know now it's going to be different without Belichick and Brady, but even when Brady was there for 20 years, you know, they had team built on defense and it evolved to, you know, high scoring offense and then kind of a, you know, kill you with 1,000 cuts towards the end. And as builders today, you know, as you've been kind of focusing on the end goal, we talked about the spec. As you've really kind of hunkered down on what you want to do and what you want to build, how does Nick Schiffer and his builders look today as opposed to 8 years ago?
Oh, 8 years ago, I was a carpentry company doing small remodels.
4 years ago.
4 years ago, I was a renovation company with primarily carpenters and some lead carpenters / supers. Today, we are building from the top down. I kind of always hate that because, like, talking top down, but from an organizational chart perspective, where we're building, you know, a really strong upper management and then strong project managers, strong site supers, and then field carpenters and self-performing labor. So the primary difference is that, you know, Julian, for example, my director of ops, is someone that has been with me 2.5 years now. And when he came on board, he said, hey, we need to build way more structure. And for 2.5 years, we've been doing that. And we've made, some days it doesn't feel like we've made a lot of progress, but every once in a while we'll stop and just take a deep breath and be like, man, we've changed a lot in a very short amount of time and implemented a lot. And I like to think that I give him, you know, the freedom that he needs to pull the levers necessary. So right now it's really about building that leadership team and me taking the position of supporting that leadership team and supporting the people that need my support and being on the front line of brand and who we are and what we do and getting people to want to work with us. You know, as we continue to refine that, I find myself having more opportunity to network and build relationships with people that 4 years ago I didn't think I'd ever talk to. And, you know, last week I'm in an architect's office that I didn't think I'd ever even speak with, never mind just show up at their office and talk with some of their associates for 2 hours and then leave there with a potential project, you know, that's super like that's super exciting for me. I didn't have like it wasn't that I didn't think I could have done it back then. It just I didn't think I would have I had the structure or the time to dedicate to it. So now it's, you know, building that management, building the team, and really focused on finding the people that want to be part of what we're doing, where we're going, and being super open about that, and just focus on, hey, this is our North Star, and if that's what you want to be doing, then come on board. You know, we got a guy starting with us in just over a month, senior PM, create like very impressive background, and I was up front with them. I said, listen, like, you're not going to be jumping onto a team that has everything figured out. You're jumping in at a point where we are literally building this, quite literally a rocket ship, where there's all this opportunity in front of us, and we just need to continue to build a really strong backbone, because in 6 to 12 months from now, we're going to be flying through the air, and we need to make sure that the right people are on this thing and know how to continue to build strength behind it.
How difficult was that to set that expectation? Or essentially, what was his response?
I would say him specifically, he was excited, but I think respectfully cautious about it. And usually I just like respond. I'm like, listen, I get it. Like I'm not the most organized person, which is why I have Julian. Like that, like we are yin and yang here, and I am focused on the vision and he is completely focused on integrating. And, you know, ultimately there's different people in this world, and some people like coming in and stepping into a structure and being able to just like know exactly what they're doing and know how they can grow. And I try to counteract the fact that we aren't fully developed yet, and we are very much building, like, we're organized. I know the way that we work compared to some other people, and I'm not saying that we're better, but I know that there's areas that we really thrive and do a better job at. But my point is, you know, I want that person to come in and know that, hey, you have the autonomy to help build this, but here's what I do know. Here's what I know I need from you today, and here's how I see you growing, and here's the potential growth path for a role of someone like you. And just being upfront and saying, like, obviously this is all malleable, but I just want to be upfront. Like, this is what I need now, and this is how I see this growing over the next X amount of years. And if you want to join and be part of what we're doing and really help build this into what I foresee this potential being, then hop on board.
It's funny because as I think about how our company's involved, especially how expectations are set, you know, how our hiring process, our onboarding, our training, our systems, just like you, I think we've come a tremendous way in the last, you know, 5-6 years, just as you have, Nick. Knowing, I would say the weaknesses of my company, I'm sure you would say knowing the weaknesses of your company and how you preface it with this new hire, how does that change how you set expectations with a new hire, you know, so that they don't come in thinking everything's just rosy. I'm at NS Builders. We're the king. Like,
I will say that that's where I've failed pretty miserably in the past. And I'll just take, I take ownership of that. Because I think that, you know, I do see it in a different light than everyone else. And, you know, and I oftentimes do talk about, you know, our best practice or the way we should be doing things, because, you know, it's like when I share, you know, my advice in business, it's like, it's not always perfect. It's not always exactly the way I say it is, but I'd rather speak the way it should be and communicate that and then set that expectation. But I try to be upfront about, like, hey, listen, like, I'm speaking in best practice. So yes, you know, your job is to submit a daily log every day by 6 p.m. Does that mean that every site super has never not done that? You know, has never been late or done it the next day? No, but I'm not like, that's not that's not the expectation. And, you know, I've lost some good people, on my team, and, you know, and some of them have had issues with the way I portray us online, which I found super interesting. And, you know, I had asked for examples, and some of the examples were legitimate, but some of them were just, well, that's the way we should be operating, and we're not, and, you know, we're not, because that's your role and you're not performing within that role. And so it's, you know, I understand that I'm portraying something, but it's not, I'm not lying about our process. You know, I guess one could say, hey, you're exaggerating this a little bit. It's like, okay, well, in what sense? And am I exaggerating in a way that is harmful? Or am I exaggerating in a way where it's, I'm trying to get our process dialed and I need everyone to step up and fulfill that role. And that's where I think I struggle with it, to the point where I actually, a couple months ago, I sent out an email, and I guess it didn't go over well with some people. But it was essentially, to summarize it, it was me communicating that I have decided that I'm no longer accepting mediocrity, and that I expect everyone to be performing at their best, I'm not interested in continuing to work with those that don't. And I wrote it much more eloquently and just was like, listen guys, like I want to do this because I want to do a good freaking job. Like I want to do really cool ass work. I want to work with great people. I want to do a great job. I want to make people super happy, and I'm just not going to accept mediocrity. And like, that's just going to be how we operate. And some people were like, I don't want to work to those expectations. And I was like, okay. And they left. And I'm like, trust me, that was hard. I thought to myself immediately, I'm like, shit, did I kind of go overboard? And I thought about it for a few days. I'm like, no, that's who I am. And that's the expectation I have, and this is what I want to do. And I have no idea how long I'm going to be on this planet. And if I live every day just like allowing shit to fly by, or just allowing it to be okay and eventually will be great, it's like I could die. Like, to be totally extreme, like I might not live another year. And for me to like be gone from this world and always wish that I had just pushed the envelope of what I was capable of, that's really been my focus, and that's really why I'm doing this spec, and that's really why I've made some of the decisions I have in the last year. Is like, I have one opportunity to live this life, and I believe that this will net me the best result, be the most gratifying, that provide the best life for my family. I could be wrong about all this, but at least this is how I feel. And I feel that if I'm going to put the effort into it and work at my peak, then I want to also work with other people that want to work at that same capacity. And like I said, it made a few people leave and jump, and you know, I had to step back and be like, okay, that's okay. As hard as it might be in the moment, you know, That's how it's going to be.
I don't think I could have said it better myself, Nick. I mean, I think that's fair enough. You know, who knows when that clock runs out, right? And it's different for all of us. And, you know, you want to make sure that someone is driven and focuses as you, Nick. You want to make sure everyone's on board and feels the same. So I want to be sensitive to your time. Appreciate you coming on again for the second time, Nick. It's been great to connect. And I know I'll see you a bunch over the next few months with Builder 20 and Coalition Summit. For those listening, International Builder Show, many things up and coming. So where can, if they don't know of you already, where can they seek you out and find you, Nick?
Just search Google at NS Builders or at Nick Schiffer. Pop Make up there, easy. YouTube, all our social media, Modern Craftsman podcast. It's all there.
A lot of good stuff, man. It's always good seeing you. I'm glad you're doing well.
Likewise, man. Appreciate you.
All right. Thanks, Nick. If you get value from the show, please support us by giving a 5-star rating and review on whatever platform you listen to. And I also have a favor to ask. We've had some incredible guests that come on and share their wisdom, their knowledge about their business. So if you have friends or family members that could benefit from those episodes, please share it with them, as well as any other business owners that you're networking with that could get value from the podcast or certain episodes. Please share those as well. Again, subscribe, make sure you're following. Any questions that you have, topics, we've had listeners reach out about certain guests that we should have on the show. Again, brad.l@aftconstruction.com. Email me for topics to address, guests that we should have on, and even if you think you'd be a great guest for the show. So again, thank you for all your support, and we'll see you next time.